Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests, which shut down the World Trade Organization's summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open to all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
Hello and welcome to this week's show. And thank you, Paul, for a really nice show and some really beautiful music. And following on from his show, today is the anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki. And I made a piece. I didn't make it. I just cut it down. It's from a guy in the States called Skidmark Bob. And it's about Hiroshima, which the anniversary was 3 or 4 days ago.
December 7, 1941, Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor had launched the war in the Pacific. Now, 3.5 years later, the Japanese have seen the tide of battle turn against them. The Americans have leapfrogged across the Pacific, sweeping the Japanese before them. Japan's Imperial Fleet has been neutralized, its Air Force overpowered. From the island air bases they now control, the Americans' B-29 flying fortresses are able to strike at the Japanese home islands. A systematic firebombing campaign is launched against cities and industrial centers. It is the most devastating attack against civilian targets ever carried out. Meanwhile, in America, Robert Oppenheimer and other scientists have spent 3 years working in secrecy to develop a new type of bomb. They have at last succeeded. But their achievement is not yet known to the world, and certainly not to the citizens of Hiroshima in the summer of 1945.
Osaka, even Okinawa, all of Japan is in danger. If it doesn't end soon, our country will become a wasteland. This is no time for games. It's serious, Gen. I won't have you making light of it.
There's one thing that bothers me. It's like you said, every major city around us has been bombed over and over again, but never Hiroshima.
On that day at 2:45 a.m., three American B-29s took off from an airbase on Tinian in the Marianas. Two of them were observation planes. The third was the Enola Gay, named for the captain's mother.
All clear, the enemy is gone! All clear, the enemy is gone! All clear, the enemy is gone!
I bet you it's another spy plane.
Well, that's a B-29 vapor trail.
Oh, look how clear the sky is. It'll be hot today.
Observation plane Easterly calling in Enola Gay. Calling in Enola Gay. Weather's fair and clear over Hiroshima. You are go for bomb run.
Roger, Easterly. Standing by to drop on target.
10,000 children played in the playground, swinging on swings, didn't hear the sound of the single plane that flew overhead. The third shift workers were just going to bed. There was a flash of light and a rumbling noise, gone in an instant. Parents, girls, and boys, 10,000 mothers were boiling rice. 1,000 prisoners of war were rolling their dice, hoping they'd survive this terrible storm. When each young man in his uniform vanished in the air, in the blink of an eye, one moment they lived, on the next they all died. Hiroshima.
We've got a fix on the target, sir. Standing by to release payload.
Roger. Release the bomb.
Releasing bomb.
Atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. We won the race of discovery against the Germans. We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans. We shall continue to use it until we completely destroy Japan's power to make war.
It was 8:15 in the morning on August 6th, 1945, when the world's first atomic bomb was dropped. The bomb exploded 580 meters over the city of Hiroshima. At the time, the population of Hiroshima was about 350,000. This big city, however, was wiped out in a flash by a single bomb. Everything within a radius of 2 kilometers was completely burned and reduced to ruin. Between 130,000 and 150,000 people were killed instantly, and many more died within the next 5 months. It's thought that approximately 200,000 people died by the end of 1950, or the first 5 years of that initial explosion. I was exposed to the atomic bombing 1.5 kilometers from the ground zero. What happened first was I saw a strong, tremendous flash, probably 1,000 times or even tens of thousand times stronger than a flash of lightning. And then next, a big thump followed, a strong blast, and in the next moment I was thrown about 15 meters from where I had been standing, and I lost consciousness. When I finally regained consciousness, I noticed that my hair was frizzled and my clothes were tattered, and I was covered with blood. I was also terribly burned all over my body, and I was running away. There were bodies completely burned black everywhere. The bodies I saw while I was escaping were piled up here and there, and I could not tell if they were men or women, or young or old. Even those who were still alive didn't last long. They were covered with blood, and I had to cross up, step over those bodies while I was escaping. My own body felt like it was burning, and the next moment I realized that I was in the river. The river was soon filled with injured people, and I could not see the surface of the water with all the people half sinking or half floating around me. So many disappeared into the water one after another. Finally, I finally got out of the water and began fleeing again out of the city, and I saw houses completely destroyed and collapsed and became ruined. I heard many voices of people who were buried under a collapsed house shouting, "Help! Help!" But after all, I was just a girl and I was hurt terribly, so I could not help any of them. In fact, I tried not to hear those voices covering my ears with my hands. I went up to a hill called Kijiyama to escape. When I looked down the city from the top of the hill, the city of Hiroshima was gone, completely disappeared. The number of the dead was so great that people didn't know what to do with them. So the bodies were loaded on a truck, one after another, like luggage to be carried away. I saw many small hands and feet among them. Each one of them was an important and irreplaceable person to their families.
What in the world? It's raining. What the? Why, that's not right. Mother, have you ever seen rain that's black like this?
This black rain began falling on the northwest section of the city. The impact of the bomb's blast had sent dust, debris, and radiation high into the atmosphere, where it gathered in a gigantic lethal cloud before returning to the earth as radioactive rain. The bomb that had fallen on the city detonated with a destructive force of 20,000 tons of TNT and generated temperatures in excess of 4,000 degrees. Some 60% of the city had vanished. But the damage did not end there. The people of Hiroshima did not know it yet, but the bomb's after effects, such as the black rain, would bring them many years of suffering. After the bombing of Hiroshima, the United States issued an ultimatum, calling on Japan to surrender and threatening to drop a second atomic bomb if it did not. The Japanese high command ignored the warning. They made certain the full extent of the damage to Hiroshima was little reported. 3 days later, on August 9th, another B-29 appeared in the sky above the city of Nagasaki. On August 15th, the Emperor Hirohito, in the first public address ever made by a Japanese sovereign, announced that the war was over.
Hiroshima.
dozen lovers made love to each other, each one of them thinking there might not be another. Living so long with death everywhere, much more than one person alone can bear. But there wasn't time for a final kiss. Who could have known it would end like this? Hiroshima. Hiroshima. A 100,000 people were living their lives, grandparents, children, fathers and wives. Now they're just shadows on the street in such a quick burst of incredible heat. Now listen to them talk about doing it again. From whence came the souls of these terrible men? Hiroshima. Hiroshima. Hiroshima.
On the anniversary of the US bombing of Nagasaki, two women and one man highlighted the continued and illegal development of UK's own weapons of mass destruction. At 12:30 a.m, three peace activists entered the high-security Faslane naval base on the Clyde and remained inside the base for over 2 hours. The activists stated that the global proliferation of nuclear weapons makes the world a more dangerous place and is terrorism on a global scale. The three, as part of Trident Plowshares, cut into the high security base through an outer perimeter fence and through a second world mesh fence. The bandit alarm was triggered, closing all gates to the base for approximately 2 hours and consequently causing a queue of traffic at the main gate for this time. Two activists headed inside a high security area before being detected by Ministry of Defence police. They remained situated between the fence and the razor wire until after 2:30 a.m. when the Ministry of Defence finally cut a hole through the world mesh to reach the activists, who were then arrested. In a joint statement, the three stated, "We have chosen the anniversary of the destruction of the Japanese city of Nagasaki by the atomic bomb on the 9th of August 1945 to take action to highlight the British government's own weapons of mass destruction presently at Faslane. As concerned and responsible citizens, we are appalled by the hypocrisy of our government, which claims to be committed to disarmament under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, yet shows no signs of fitting actions to these words." Earlier this summer, the US and UK governments were accused by the British American Security Information Council of conspiring to break the international agreement to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons. BASIC, along with another nuclear think tank, the acronym Institute for Disarmament Diplomacy in London, have detailed evidence of a large-scale collaboration by the two countries to develop their nuclear arsenals, an activity that the NPT is specifically designed to prevent. The horrors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki must never be allowed to happen again, yet the US and UK governments are doing nothing to lessen that risk. Peace slogans were also painted on buildings within the area. A picture of the destruction of Nagasaki was hung within the base. All three were arrested for breaching Ministry of Defence bylaws and one for two sets of malicious damage. They were released later in the morning. On August the 23rd, many activists from the UK and abroad will be protesting and blockading and taking action at Faslane for Carry On Up the Clyde. Meanwhile, there promises to be many more actions at bases on the Clyde during the two-week Trident Ploughshares disarmament camp, which begins on August the 18th. Now we have another track by Steel Pulse called The Handsworth Revolution.
And we move from Handsworth to Weymouth. An update on last week's Weymouth anti-bypass protest site. Protesters set up a new camp on proposed route of Weymouth Relief Road. They urgently need tools and support. Activists have been in occupation of an area of woodland on the route of the Weymouth Relief Road since the beginning of July. Now they have withdrawn from the woods and set up a site in a prominent place at the beginning of the proposed road route. The road, which would cut through areas of outstanding natural beauty and ancient woodland, in its proposed length of 6 kilometres, was due to be built a decade ago, but was shelved due to fierce opposition from activists and locals. Now they're trying to push it through again, and activists hope to raise awareness of the damage it will cause by building defences at the beginning of the route. They've erected a tower which is highly visible from the surrounding area. They could do with a visit. The site is really close to the beach. Donations of the following would be extremely welcome. Polyprop, nails, cement, wood for building, boards, beams, etc., tarps, stuff for making banners, tools. The site is behind a Safeways off the A354 behind a roundabout where Dorchester Road meets Weymouth Way. Site mobile is 07800 760257. Email weymouth@roadalert.org.uk.
Electricians who staged one of the country's longest-running industrial disputes and won celebrity backing were unfairly sacked, a tribunal decided. The massive win marked the end of a protest which followed claims that unskilled workers were hired on the cheap to carry out electrical work on the £25 million One Piccadilly Gardens development. A Manchester employment tribunal found four of the men, members of the Transport and General Workers Union, had been sacked for their trade union activities. It ruled they are entitled to compensation over and an above an ordinary unfair dismissal award. Electric Subcontractors, DAF, fired the men while they were working on the Piccadilly site. The firm has about 4 weeks to appeal against the decision. The sacked men set up a picket line outside the site to highlight their case. They later moved it to a £30 million court building in Spinningfields, where the same company was carrying out the electrical work. In total, the protest lasted just over a year and they gathered 40,000 signatures on a petition. It was also signed by Manchester United director Sir Bobby Charlton, Coronation Street actors Johnny Briggs, brackets Mike Baldwin, Michael Leavelle, Kevin Webster, and Happy Mondays star Bez. Steve Atkinson from Denton, who led the protest, said, "This is a great victory, not just for us, but for all those who supported us as well. You can't overstate the enormity of the victory and what it means. The Manchester public who donated to our campaign and signed our petition were fantastic. At times, with the weather and the hardship, it was very tough, but this was a principled stand and we were determined to see it through." Seven other electricians sacked at the same time lost their cases for unfair dismissal. They are considering an appeal against the decision. Mr. Ackerson said, "Our delight is mixed with sadness for our colleagues who did not win their cases. We are hoping they will appeal and justice will be done." DAF electrical boss Dave Fahey was unavailable for comment. An employee at the firm said he was on holiday. John Rouse, the TGWU National Secretary for Manufacturing, said, "This is an excellent result for lads in Manchester. They deserve recognition for their determination to fight for their rights." And now more music.
You and Amanda won.
Australian court has acquitted all officers of human rights abuses in East Timor during 1999. An Indonesian court has upheld the appeals of the last four military and police officers charged with crimes in the carnage that occurred in East Timor in 1999. The trials have been widely condemned as a sham and an attempt by the Indonesian government to deflect international criticism through delays and legal processes. The results of the sham trials are that all Indonesian military and police officers, 16 in all, have not been deemed responsible for the terror in East Timor. The only people convicted are two ethnic Timorese, who, though involved, were by no means the masterminds. The Indonesian military destroyed East Timor systematically with massive loss of life. The Indonesian state and military has walked away without consequence. Of terrifying concern is the fact that a number of those who oversaw operations in East Timor have been appointed to oversee other conflict areas, including Papua and Aceh. East Timor has attempted to pursue its justice, but Indonesia has refused to hand over the suspects in its military who remain at large and are still serving. Sadly, the international community, as it did in the past, is turning a blind eye. Both the US and Australia are seeking to renew their military ties despite the sham trials and despite ongoing human rights abuses in West Papua and Aceh. The East Timor Network reported that last month 78 members of Congress wrote to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan urging him to appoint a commission of experts to evaluate existing justice processes and to carefully consider recommending an international tribunal on East Timor if it finds that current processes have not achieved justice. This month, 65 members of the House of Representatives urged US Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld to reconsider resumption of the bilateral defense dialogue, BDD, with Indonesia because its military has successfully evaded accountability for its well-documented crimes against humanity and war crimes in East Timor. If people want to write to Kofi Annan at the UN demanding further action to be taken to achieve truth and justice, you can write to Kofi Annan, the Secretary of the General United Nations, United Nations Plaza, New York, NY 10017 US, or email the Human Rights Commission at 1503@hcr.unog.ch. I'm going to read that again because I think that's a bit difficult. 1503@hcr.unog.ch. And you can also email the Australian Prime Minister John Howard and demand that he drops all plans to train the Indonesian military. For this, go to www.pm.gov.au and lodge your complaint that he is supporting a military responsible for terror.
And this Sunday, Venezuelans will vote on whether to keep their constitutional president, Hugo Chavez, elected with a promise to redistribute Venezuela's enormous oil wealth. Before he became president, Venezuela was the number one oil supplier to the US. This referendum will be a chance to find out if he still has the support of the people, having failed to oust him with a traditional US-backed coup in 2002 and a general strike, bosses' lockout, the following Christmas. Opposition to the referendum might actually end up strengthening his legitimacy. This week, groups in London are holding a week of solidarity with the Venezuelan people and their right to self-determination without US interference. Daily events are happening at the Rampart Creative Centre in Whitechapel, which started on Monday the 9th with the opening of their Latin American Liberation Exhibition. This Friday is a roundtable discussion on Venezuela's media coup with Tariq Ali and speakers from IndyMedia and the NUJ. There is a picket of the US Embassy on the day of the referendum, Sunday the 15th. This starts at 2 p.m. with a Bolivian picnic beforehand in Hyde Park near Speaker's Corner. As just mentioned, on Monday night, 9th of August, the Venezuelan Week of Solidarity started at the Rampart Centre in East London with a vibrant art opening. 50 or more people attended to view an exhibition of contemporary art from Mexico, Argentina and, of course, Venezuela. The initiator Charlie Allen gave a brief introduction of the situation in Venezuela leading to the programme of the Solidarity Week, which goes on till Sunday the 15th. The art of the Sunday the 15th, the day of the referendum. The temperature climbed in the crowded Rampart Hall as people socialised and enjoyed free Caracas-style veggie hot dogs, beer and wine. The evening was rounded off with screening of a new documentary, The Bolivarian Venezuela, People and Fight for the Fourth World War, which analyses Venezuela's Bolivian Revolution as part of the world movement against capitalist globalization. The film follows the evolution of the popular movement of El Carrazo. Is that right?
Let's have a look.
What was it, Malik?
Caracaso.
El Caracaso.
Revolt in February 1989 until the massive mobilizations that restored their elected government 48 hours after a US-supported military coup. We're running out of time here, so I'm going to give you some website addresses to find more. www.thenewagenda.org, www.handsoffvenezuela.org, www.rampart.co.nr.
Okay, that's about it for this week. We're now going out with some interviews with Alex Gask, a lawyer for Liberty, talking about the recent findings of the Dicey Stop and Search case, and some interviews with Jean Buskin from US Labour Against the War. So we hope you enjoy those, and please listen next week. Goodbye.
And see you next week. Bye.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London.
I'm here with Alex Gask, who is the lawyer that took over the Liberty case regarding the Section 44 stop and search at the Dicey demonstrations in September 2003. The first ruling was the police acted lawfully, but Liberty decided as an organisation to appeal the first ruling, and this is how the appeal went.
Well, unfortunately, the appeal wasn't successful. The actual arguments we made were rejected by the court. In the main, what they said was that the power to stop and search without any need for any suspicion of a criminal offence being committed or being about to be committed was a legitimate power in the light of the general terrorist threat that the country is currently under. However, while the appeal wasn't successful, there were some very, very positive things to come out of the judgment, particularly for people involved in protest. And that was the fact that the court was extremely critical of the way the police actually acted at the DSEI arms fair. They also were extremely critical of the way the police dealt with the case itself, having a go at the fact that the police, I think they described their evidence as lamentable, and basically said that the police really failed to discharge the legal burden on them to show that they had acted lawfully. So while we weren't actually victorious, it was certainly decided that the police hadn't acted correctly. And the very positive thing to come out of the case, even before the judgment, was the fact that the Home Office have released new guidance to police officers for the use of these powers under Section 44. And we're certainly very hopeful, and the aim of the guidance is to prevent abuses of the power, such as those that happened at the arms fair. And therefore, in future, if this guidance is followed, the power should only be used when there really is a particular terrorist concern, and should not be used just simply to police protests.
Have you seen a copy of these guidelines yet?
We have seen a copy of the guidelines, yes, and the guidelines make specific reference to the case brought by Liberty on behalf of the protesters. So we have seen a copy of them. Essentially, they just basically tell the police that they need to be a lot more careful, and it gives them a far more detailed form that needs to be filled out in relation to stop and search under Section 44.
Is there a copy of the guidelines available for members of the public to download?
There is indeed, yes. It's available on the Home Office website. I can't give you the exact address now, but it's on there now, yes.
If you're stop and searched under Section 44 of the Terrorist Act, be aware that there's revised guidelines, and maybe check it out for your own information. Thank you very much.
Like I said before, it pays the bills.
So, according to Akkadian, not under Akkadian, we tell you Akkadian on the day. Watch it, dude! Watch it, watch it, with the big black boot on! Watch it, we're coming for back.
Back.
Yeah. Some say you wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the
girl, them tune for make them move them waistline and them spine in the time. Mat over mine, mine over matter, fastest got away for shot a line. Because say you wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the girl, them tune for make them move them waistline and them spine in the time. Mat over mine, mine over matter, fastest got away. On your name rhyme of a new style and it rule everything. Sometime a DJ, sometime a rap. Want a fat y'all come sit down in a me chair. If I get club, I now go inside. A fee of a girl fee give me the wickedest slam. Burn a fire pan the man them way at you. Even if you vex you can't rush me and my friends. Be a big machine with your block on the corner. Because a ganja man when I stop on them, my real life is a serious scheme. Whoa, careful how you put on your tuxedo. And that's all I have to say about that. Say you wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the girl, them shoot for me. Them move them waistline and them sign in the time. Mat over mine, mine over matter. Fastest got away, me shot a line. Because say you wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the girl, them shoot for me. Them move them waistline and them spine in the time. When you know her, man, give me a verse. When the puppet half duck, anyway we book a girl, she must get sex. Everybody wonder what coming after. Take it for truth, me soon are dead with dealing. Girl, them keep whining and them waist rotating. Everybody wonder how much girl we looking. Coming at me kitchen, beer, food, and us boiling. Watching my business and for them wanna mash up. Like a car, them crashing our next one. You wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the girl, them tune for make them move them waistline and them spine in the time. Mat over mine, mine over matter. Fastest get away, me shot a line. Because so you wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Up the girl, them tune for make them move them waistline and them spine in the time. Mat over mine, mine over matter. Fastest get away. They wanna have it all of the people, them so proud to right now. No need you, run with them. Junior rhyme, but put up on the band. Tune for me, them move them waistline and them spine in the time. Mat over mine, mine over matter. Fastest get away, me shot a line. Because so you wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the so, me no want to no take me serious, car. More time you have to inject a little fun in the business. See, car, if everybody too serious then Jamaica going to be a serious place. And Jamaica is supposed to be a fun place. So watch ya, just follow the tune, me you. Alright. You wanna rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the girl, them tune for make them move them waistline and them spine in the time. Mat over mine, mine over matter. Fast is getting away, me shot a line. You gotta rhyme, I gotta rhyme. Me up the girl, them tune for make them move them waistline and them spine in the time.
Indie Media, Radio London!
I'm here with Jean Buskin, who's a trade unionist from the United States. Which trade union are you from, Jean?
I'm an officer in the Food and Allied Service Trades Division, which is a part of the AFL-CIO. Although in this particular endeavor here, I'm representing the U.S. Labor Against the War, which is a national organization of local, regional, and national unions.
What is the general kind of rank and file attitude towards the war in Iraq?
I think at this point, whatever reservations there were initially. Having heard that everything was based on lies, the sentiment has become overwhelming at this point that this was a mistake. It's been a disaster for our economy, for our many working class people who've died and been permanently injured from the United States, most of them families and friends of people in the trade union movement. And people were horrified at what they're seeing our sons and daughters doing over there in the same way they were in Vietnam and the suffering of the Iraqis. And this prison situation with Abu Ghraib has put many people over the top.
Has there been any actions against the war from the trade union movement in the United States?
Well, the formation of U.S. Labor Against the War itself was a very important project, and it was a movement from the bottom up. Of trade unionists all over the country deciding and talking about it in their workplaces and in their union halls and at their executive boards and passing resolutions against it and eventually beginning to coordinate the U.S. Labor Against the War. We've now reached a point where this summer some of the largest unions in the United States, unions with over a million members, have been meeting and passing overwhelming resolutions opposing the occupation and asking the U.S. to get out now.
When the war started last year, what action did the unions take to try and prevent the bombardment of Iraq?
Well, there have been a lot of things. I mean, there have been rallies and demonstrations, and we have lobbied Congress, and there were many protests of different kinds. One of the most significant ones took place at on the docks in Oakland, where the company that was operating the docks in Oakland was a company called SSA, Stevedoring Services of America, that was later to be offered the first contract to operate the docks in Umkasa, in Iraq. And this was in the works, and so there was a protest by the anti-war movement against this company's operations in Oakland, and the longshore workers refused to cross the picket line of the demonstrators, and the police came and shot nine people with rubber bullets. Some of them were hurt seriously, and people were totally shocked. Some people had to go to the hospital and so on, and the labor movement was outraged, but there were no apologies. We believe that this was something done nationally through the Homeland Security Department in Washington. And the trade unionists and the peace movement are still trying to get some measure of justice through the courts for what occurred there.
Since the introduction of the Patriot Act, have unions been penalized?
Well, the Patriot Act itself doesn't specifically speak about unions, but it has set up an attitude in this country where, first of all, it allowed the government to sweep up immigrants all over the country. And immigrants are one of the major focuses of the organizing of the labor movement in this country, in our country, in the United States, since so many thousands and millions of low-wage workers are immigrants. And so this whole anti-immigrant hysteria of the Patriot Act that passed made the immigrants in workplaces all over the country terrified about organizing in any way that they could somehow be called terrorists. Thousands of immigrants who, prior to the Patriot Act, had been organizing at airports all over the country as baggage screeners. They were low-wage, minimum-wage people who screened the baggage at security for what were private security companies. They all were thrown out of their job after the 9/11, and because of the hysteria, including the Patriot Act, because they were, aliens. You know, they weren't full citizens of some kind. But in general, the climate, I think, can best be described by the fact that the head of the Department of Education in the federal government, appointee of George Bush, called the National Education Association, the NEA, a 2,007 million person union of teachers, teachers who teach first grade and kindergarten and preschool and so on and so forth, called them a terrorist organization. The Patriot Act defines terrorism so broadly that it effectively could be anybody who is against the government. I think that his efforts have been seriously hampered and tempered by the opposition in the labor movement and in the peace movement, and the Patriot Act is seriously under attack. However, if he were to be reelected with the Republican Congress, he's made it clear that the war on terror is a permanent war. It's replaced, really, the Cold War. And so they want to create a climate for years to come where they have the right to basically declare anybody a terrorist and lock them up.
So even though this is legislation on account of things being an emergency legislation, they're constantly re-rolling the Patriot Act.
Well, the Patriot Act has to be at least some of the provisions. I don't think all of them, but some of the provisions have to be reaffirmed in Congress for them to continue. And that's up in the air right now, and that too will be affected by the election. But simultaneously, a Patriot Act 2 has been put forward that actually toughens clauses and the regulations that the first Patriot Act puts forward. So we stand on a precipice here of hopefully defeating Bush and defeating the policies of Bush and assuring that President Kerry, if that comes to be, opposes the Patriot Act and everything like that. Or, on the other hand, the possibility that were Bush to win and were the climate to be right, that he would pursue it and exaggerate it.
What powers are they seeking to gain with the amendments to the Patriot Act?
I don't know all the details, but it simply breaks down all the law, all the barriers, and weakens them considerably. That where you have the limits on which the government can do their searches and seizures. And the fact is that the fundamental part of the Patriot Act allows them to lock you up as a enemy combatant forever, without providing any evidence, without you ever having a lawyer, without even admitting that they have arrested you, simply on the word of the president that you are an enemy combatant. That's the same conditions under which people are in Guantanamo. They have created a situation where those same things can now be done to people in the United States. And I think the Patriot Act 2 would elaborate and clarify and exaggerate the things that were really, as you referred to them, got put in on the short term because people were afraid of 911. This would really institute it permanently. There have been some very significant legal challenges recently, both to the to the right of the president to arrest and charge people as enemy combatants without trial, and also to the fact that these people in Guantanamo, whether they're from the United States or not, have a right to a fair hearing. So the Supreme Court and many of the judges of the land, even those that are Republican appointees, are somewhat horrified at what's happening. And there has certainly been a lot of backlash. And clearly, in the end, I think it is totally unconstitutional. But really, what gets to determine what's unconstitutional or not is not clearly a legal matter. It's very much a matter of the political climate. And we in the labor movement and in the peace movement have to make sure that the climate is such that no Supreme Court would ever support this kind of work.
We'll make a virtue of chimney goes, two halts, a tray of matches, three braves the weaving floor, all pray for life for four. Five down the pit descends, six ploughs in fields and meadows, seven spins the handloom round, eight lies in the burial ground. One up the chimney goes, two halts, a tray of matches, three braves the weaving floor.